It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! Sports! I can barely keep my eyes open after the amount of sports I watched this weekend, but I would do it all again if there was another 32 games tipping off tonight. I would sit right back down, watch all those games again, bet on them, eat, drink, do everything I want to do. But we got to talk about sports first. So we got lots of great topics to touch on today, including March Madness delivers some Cinderellas. Sam Burns goes back-to-back at the Valspar. Deshaun Watson finds a new home. The Blue Jays make a splash, and the NHL trade deadline comes and goes. But first, Mike, how was your week?
On top of all the basketball, the golf, there was a lot going on. So it's like, how do you fit this all into a weekend to watch everything? I also went and visited a very good friend of mine. It was his birthday. So, you know, went to see him, his wife, and his kids with another buddy of mine. So that was good. But then, you know, there was a two-night wrestling pay-per-view. And I know that's not your genre, but, you know, I had to fill that in. And
Why? Hold on a second. Yeah. Is this WWE, this WrestleMania or no?
No. That's in April. This.
Why would they cram it in on a March Madness weekend? Don't they know their viewership might be down?
I don't know. I mean, this promotion's a bit smaller. It's an older promotion that's kind of been brought back, if you will. I don't know if you're very familiar in the rock scene with the Smashing Pumpkins.
No.
Okay. So
I know the Smashing Pumpkins, but I don't know what they have to do with wrestling.
So here's the thing. The front man, William Patrick Corgan, also known as Billy Corgan, owns this wrestling promotion. And he's like the owner, the main booker. So his thing had a pay-per-view. So it's pretty cool.
He also claims to have seen aliens or lived with aliens. There's a weird story down there too.
I just stick to the music and the wrestling on that side. But, you know, pretty cool. And so that I had to fill that in. So I was actually going with the two TVs.
Wow.
A little Starkman-esque setup here in the basement over the weekend. I had my TV with my Apple TV box with that. And then I had the basketball on the main TV. But aside from that, lots of changes in the curling world. Teams are starting to shake up as we were hinting at last week. So not too many announcements on teams yet, a lot of breakups. So that's been interesting. And then this week, on top of all the basketball, we're going to get back to all the NFL news. There's some big soccer games going on this week, some big World Cup qualifiers. Canada has a chance to qualify officially for the Men's World Cup on Thursday night. They're playing Costa Rica. There's a big game with Italy. They're trying to keep their World Cup hopes alive on Thursday. So on top of that, a lot going on, and along with the regular gauntlet of the March Madness, the NFL news, you know, baseball spring training starting. So it's jam-packed.
Yeah, and as we've said before, this is the best, call it month and a half of sports for the entire year because everyone's kind of moving and shaking. But someone that wasn't moving and shaking this weekend was me. I had my ass firmly planted on the couch. I think I consumed 37 beers, 5 vodka bubblies, 4 bags of chips, 2 pounds of wings, bunch of pizza, and then multiple buckets of French fries. Just a debauchery. I feel like shit. I'm a slob. But man, was it worth it. What a ride. What a weekend. It's so fun to just be nonstop either watching the basketball or you have your phone out when you're in a public setting trying to talk to someone else, but they don't know that you're just following some score of some game between a bunch of kids that you don't even know. But I did find time in between to get to all the kids' activities as well. I was a full-time dad too, so I'm multitasking here, but there was the college basketball. There was hockey I was watching. There was the golf I was tracking too. I did end up going to the birthday party as my wife did not have a good enough offer that was acceptable in the trade request that we discussed on last week's podcast. I only missed one of the best games of the weekend, though, between Baylor coming back from being down double digits, forcing overtime, and then losing to UNC. But, I mean, it was worth it. My son had a good time at the party, and I was hanging out with some of the other parents, and I was tracking the game and, you know, knew that I wasn't going to be able to watch it.
They didn't have it on?
It was outside at a school. The kids were playing a ball hockey just to keep things outside. So they were having fun. My kid even went in net a little bit, just got shelled. I mean, people were just rifling balls by him. So good thing he's not a goalie. But and then I'm back home. As soon as I get home, I got to get down to the basement. I got to get the games on. I got to get my layout set out. I got to get my sheets. I got all my tracking my bets. I got my group chats. People messaging me about different games. And did you see this? Did you see that? You know, the kids go to bed. These games go right till midnight, sometimes almost 1 o'clock. So I'm doing a whole bunch of like silent cheering, which is a new thing for me. I'm fist pumping in silence. Yes, come on, keep it down, be quiet, loud cheers, and you know, smacking the couch when things don't go my way, but falling to my knees, putting my head in my hands, like, I can't believe that random 19-year-old kid just missed a free throw. It cost me, you know, because I had the spread. All those different things were going through my mind while I'm trying to stay quiet because the kids are trying to sleep. So it's a whole new ballpark for me. Are you a loud cheer at home when you're watching sports?
Depends who's playing. It really depends who's playing. If it's one of my teams, I can get into it. But, you know, with the college games like this, I don't get too hyped up to the point where I'm yelling like I would for like a Packers game or a Wisconsin game.
Right. But, you know, I did mention that I ate about 4 bags of chips. It might have been a little bit more than that.
What flavors?
Well, I was just about to say, do you have a favorite flavor? Do you have a favorite flavor?
Ooh, I don't know.
We had just the plain, obviously plain, a little bit of hell of a good dip, ketchup chips, some Cool Ranch. Then you got the Tostitos. I love a good barbecue as well. But I think that's where I cut it off. I'm not salt and vinegar. I'm not dill pickle. None of those.
What about All Dressed, Canadian classic?
No.
Wow. Okay. I like the Miss Vicky salt and vinegar. Those are good. They're a little better cooked. Crunchier. I guess more. Yes, crunchier. That's what we're looking for.
Crunchier. But so I had this bag of ketchup chips, one of my favorites. I'm like, I'm going to dive into these. And my 5-year-old son was kind of down watching the basketball a little bit with me, sitting beside me, playing with some of his toys while we were doing it. And I caught him doing something really weird. He was taking the ketchup chip, licking all the way up and down both sides, getting all the ketchup flavoring off of it, and then eating the chip. I had never seen him do this before, nor have I ever seen another human being do this before. It was the weirdest and grossest thing. But then I was telling my wife, I actually videoed it and sent it to her. And she's like, oh, yeah, I do that. And so does everyone in my family. And there I was like, what? I almost called the lawyer to draw up the divorce papers because I think it was the grossest thing I'd seen.
You're not saying I've seen that happen before. It's like with the Oreo. Some people just shove it in their mouth. Oh. Some like to part it, lick the cream filling. People do that with chip flavors. It's common, man.
It was weird. Licking chips before eating them. No, you get all that flavor in the mouth while you're crunching on the chip. But so then I decided on Sunday afternoon, I was like, all right, we got to get moving a little bit here. It's the fourth day of me just sitting like a slob in front of the TV, eating and watching basketball and sports. So I decided, hey, you know what? We're just getting out of that winter, you know. Spring's almost kind of in the air here, and it's time to maybe make that rotation from hockey to baseball. So let's go outside. The boys wanted to go out to the park there, and we decided we were going to do a little batting practice. So I set them up, get everything going, and I just start throwing them heaters right across the plate. Boom, boom. I figured, you know, I'll give them a couple of good fastballs, test out my curve, see if they can hit it a little bit. And, you know, maybe they'll last about 20 minutes or so, and that's enough of them, and then we'll move on to something else. But next thing I knew, every kid that was in or around the park came over and said, hey, can I get a chance to hit? Can I get a chance to hit? Next thing I know, I'm throwing BP for about 12 kids in the neighborhood, just whipping it in there. I had to take my jacket off. I was sweating a bit. The arm was getting a little tense, and woke up the next morning. My elbow was sore. My shoulder was a little tight. Even the muscles right up the neck to right behind the ears, I couldn't even move. So, I mean, by no means am I Nolan Ryan or anything like that, but I think I got to go on the IR after yesterday.
Tossing heat at, and to preface, both your children are under the age of 10. So that's good. Yes. That you're whipping fastballs at them and trying to get them to hit curveballs. And then the local children all flock to the diamond to get some cuts in for BP. So you're a long range, you know, batting practice tosser now for the local youths.
Yep. Hear me out.
That's great.
If anyone in the inter-county league needs a BP pitcher, just give me a call. I can swoop in and give you about a half an hour worth of pitches before my arm falls off. But hey, listen, we got great sports topics we talked about. There was action on the field and on the court. And then there was a whole bunch off as teams start getting themselves ready for the next season, whether it's playoffs or the start of their season. And we're going to break it down in the T5 right after this break. Let the madness begin, and did it ever start off on the right foot with an overtime game for the play-in spots, which started the weekend off right in college basketball, and that will be our T1. It's only been 4 days, but there has been over 48 games in March Madness, and we've lost a number one, two number twos, and even two number threes. The SEC has been dominated, while the surprise team in the Big Ten is Michigan. The big dogs of Gonzaga, Duke, Arizona, Villanova, and Kansas are still around, but so are Miami and Iowa State and even a school from New Jersey with only 2,000 students named St. Peter's. Mike, I'm assuming your bracket is still perfect, but what surprised you the most from the weekend?
I believe going into the Sweet 16, I have three of my final four still alive.
Wow, that's really good.
So that's good. Wisconsin was the first casualty. So I was going out on a pretty big limb there, but what the hell do I know? You know, first round, you saw two of your typical 12 over 5 seeds, UConn and Iowa, went out in the first round. Three number 6 seeds lose: Alabama, Colorado State, and LSU. Sorry, Stark. But obviously, as you mentioned off the top, the main one there, 15th ranked St. Peter's takes out number 2, Kentucky, in overtime. That was obviously the talk of round one, I think. Second year back-to-back, a 15 seed has progressed. So, interesting start there through Thursday and Friday. Most of the teams you figured were going to win probably did, for the most part, for the first round. But then the second round, I thought there were some great games. We talked about Gonzaga, them in Memphis. Memphis gave them a real test over the weekend. Duke, Michigan State, another great game. Arizona, TCU, Sunday night going into overtime. And the other game, which I thought was, you know, one of the games of the tournament, UNC and Baylor going to overtime, defending champs knocked out. So some good action from the first 4 days.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the big surprise was St. Peter's winning twice. But it's kind of what you love about March Madness, these Cinderella teams. Can they get there? Any team can win at any time. You know, the underdog has a chance because it's one game. And, you know, you see these Kentucky team who's got 2 5-star players, 3 4-star players, and then St. Peter's, they were all unranked players coming out of high school. Bunch of no-name kids, really, who just kind of got a D1 scholarship at a no-name school, took it, and went there. And that's what's great. It's one game. Who wants it more? And you got a chance to move on, and you got a chance to continue to move on. And I think that's what happened where St. Peter's, you see maybe the first round, you see more upsets, let's call it, because kids are nervous. These are kids. They don't know what they're getting into. They haven't been on this biggest stage. They've watched this tournament forever, and now they're playing in it. And they know, oh my God, even though it's a small school, they could beat us if they just score more baskets. It sounds so simple. But now that you kind of get into the tournament a little bit more, I see there'll be less upsets, like big upsets. I mean, listen, Power Five schools can win at any time. But it's these St. Peter's. That was the big shock for me, was them winning the second game as they slipped by Murray State, who is also a really good team. So to have two kind of upset wins was massive for them and really impressive. I don't know if they'll be able to keep it going into the Sweet 16. We haven't seen that in quite a few years, but I think it was a great story for them. And then on the other aspect of it, you got a Gonzaga, who's the number one team coming in, and both of their games were a little bit scary, but they were able to pull it off. They were either down or tied at the half both games. The first game, they stormed all the way back. They almost covered the number of 22.5 against Georgia State when they were losing at half. So this is a real team that has a chance to really get it going. But it wasn't a strong weekend. By no means are they back home thinking, oh, we're really cooking going into the next round. They're missing that superstar player, let's call it. I know Holmgren, he's set to be a top pick, but I just don't know if he has it yet. And the first game, he had 19 points, 17 rebounds. People are like, wow, this kid's legit. Second game, he was only 9 points, 9 rebounds, barely showed up against Memphis in a real tight game that they were lucky to come back and win. So those were the two, you know, aspects of the tournament where I was looking at it from the first week of big-time Cinderella playing great and the big-time supposed champion struggling through the first two.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we were prefacing it the past few weeks just with this tournament. The rankings aside, you know, nobody felt like a true runaway train here. You know, teams were going to lose. There's going to be upsets. I mean, we weren't calling 15 over two ranked teams. But, I mean, it's not that shocking when you kind of take a look at the season, especially the last 3 or 4 weeks of the regular season, certainly the conference championships, and now into the tournament itself, where, you know, there isn't really that one team that you say, you know, these guys are the favorite. I mean, looking ahead, we got some good games on deck here this coming week with the Massive. Sweet 16. You know, four of them, I think four of the eight games in the Sweet 16 really could go either way. You got Texas Tech and Duke, should be great. UNC, UCLA, Arizona, Houston, I believe, was a Final Four team last year.
Yep.
They're a tough team to play against, and Arizona's coming off that overtime win. And Michigan, Villanova, that should be another good one here in the Sweet 16 over Thursday, Friday. So, and that just sets up even potential better games these top teams win in the Elite Eight. So it'll be good.
Yeah, and if like we do a whole reset right now, if you could start a whole new bracket to see who your final four would be, I think how I would have it lay out is obviously a little bit different than what I did before the tournament. In that South region, I do like Arizona. I know they kind of struggled there against TCU, but they showed a lot of guts. They battled back. It was the final game of the weekend, and they battled back to tie it, and TCU had the ball. They steal it, and they have a chance on a breakaway to win it, and the kid goes up to dunk it, and I was yelling, the time, lay it up. But he tries to dunk it, and he's like half a second late. I couldn't believe that. Luckily, they go on to win in overtime, but I like their path. They got to play Houston, obviously tough but beatable. But then after that, Michigan or Villanova, I think they could beat them. In the West, I mean, Duke impressed me. I thought they looked really good, and with Gonzaga struggles. I think I like Duke possibly to get in the Final Four of that region. Midwest, they'll have a big game between Kansas and Providence before that winner goes on to meet the two upset teams of Iowa State and Miami. I think I like Providence to bounce out of that region. And then the East is a complete mess. But Purdue, they've looked like the best team for me, an impressive win over Texas. So a whole reset, but I mean, I could possibly be wrong again.
Yeah, I mean, the way it's shaking out, you figure Gonzaga versus Texas Tech or Duke probably in the Elite Eight for the West. East side, UNC and UCLA, that's going to be a hell of a game. UNC has looked very good in the two games. I know they got a big against Baylor and blew the lead, but, I mean, they've scored over 90 points in both of their games. And if you look further, they kind of handled Duke in the final game of the regular season.
Right.
So they're on a bit of a roll here, regardless of what happened in the conference championship. Purdue, you know, solid team and very, that'll be a very good matchup, provided they get through, of course, but then they got to play UNC or UCLA on the other side. The South, I agree with you. I think Arizona gets by Houston and probably will take out Michigan or Villanova to get into the Final Four. And then Kansas, Providence, that's going to be a good game. And I agree with you. That's going to be
the game
you.
For the region, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because then you're playing a 10th or 11th ranked seed who, you know, credit to them. They've played well. They deserve to be there. But it's going to be good. Another good 4 days ahead this week.
Yeah, this is the Sweet 16 is when that Cinderella slipper falls off or whatever the fairy tale story is. I'm not that into Disney flicks, unfortunately. Now, with only... I got to research my Cinderella story now. She loses a slipper. Someone finds it, something. There's a pumpkin, yada, yada, yada. She ends up with the prince, right? I think so.
I think that's how it goes.
Now, with only 3 TVs and multiple basketball games on, it was tough to track the Valspar Open at Innisbrook. But once I saw my pick, Sam Burns, near the top after Saturday's round, it was must-watch Sunday, and that will be our T2. Mr. Burns went back-to-back at the Valspar, winning in a 2-hole playoff over Davis Riley. The two have been competing against each other since they were 12, but Burns shot a 32-foot putt on the 16th hole to win the tournament in dramatic fashion for his second win of the season. Mike, do you want to say congratulations to me now or wait till our golf picks?
I'm cooking up maybe a Cinderella story of my own here. The past couple of weeks, I've got the lead early. My guys just haven't closed, and Adam Hadwin was one of them this week. But we'll see what happens. We got a lot of tournaments left. But, you know, Sam Burns' third victory in 22 starts, you know, shoots a 69 2 under to win. It was Sunday was kind of back and forth, right? Riley had the lead for a chunk of time. Then he has that blow up triple bogey on 5. Reminded me of me playing out there. So it was kind of nice to see. But he had a piece of the lead. Justin Thomas had a piece of the lead. Naismith, Burns, they all kind of flip-flop back and forth. And then as you got further on the back nine, Burns just kind of maintained, you know, the driver's seat. Riley gets back in. Birdie on 17, had a chance to win on 18, but came up short. And then they go to the playoff, which, of course, Burns wins on the second hole. But a good performance from him. Goes back-to-back, first guy since Paul Casey, and at that tournament anyway. Yep. And he's not playing this weekend. He's withdrawn from the match play. So it's going to be hard to ride the hot hand this week.
Yeah, I think Burns, I mean, let's go back to the players. He had a really strong performance there as well, just falling a little bit short. He's probably a little bit disappointed coming out of that tournament and knowing he was going down to Valspar to play. I mean, he was mid-pack on Friday and then kind of Saturday bubbled up near the top. Playing from behind is probably better for him than having this lead. He's just not seasoned enough on that stage yet. He shot a minus 269 on Sunday. It was his 8th consecutive round in the 60s at the Copperhead course in Innisbrook. I thought he played smooth golf. Very good putting. He's obviously a great iron player, and he just stayed out of trouble. There's not a ton of trouble on this course, but obviously we saw with Riley, he got himself into it. But one thing I did want to call out, it was on the second playoff hole. They went from the 18th to the 16th, so fans, you know, moving, scattering to go get there. He's up at the tee about to hit, and a bunch of fans ran across the fairway to get to the other side. So he had to stop. His caddy yells out, like, hey, let's stop here. He resets. He gets himself back up to the ball. Some moron runs again across the fairway to get across to the other side. To happen twice, I was thinking, this is going to cost him his concentration, probably cost him the hole and now the tournament, because he's so unfocused. Because he's like, did that just happen twice where someone ran across? He hit it a little bit left into the rough. I thought he was going to be in trouble as Riley went down right down the fairway, but he was able to recover. I mean, fans can't think that every weekend's the Waste Management Open and be getting buckled and running across during the playoffs. I don't know what the volunteers were doing. I know it's tough to control that many people, but it was a crazy scene.
Yeah, and you'd think, too, playoff, there's no other action happening on any of the other 17 holes, so staff the people there and make sure people just stay in line. And agree with you.
Yeah, I did like the Riley story. I was following it. Obviously, he's a pretty unknown player kind of leading into this one. Everyone was counting him out. He had that triple bogey early, but he battled back, shot even par. He even had a chance to win it on the 72nd hole, just couldn't make the birdie. He won $850,000, which is awesome. That's great money. But the win would have got him into the Masters. It would have gotten the PGA Championship. It would have gotten him to the WGCs and the Century Tournament of Champions. Those are things that Burns already has. And if these guys have been competing their whole lives, I kind of feel bad that he's being left out here. I mean, after the playoff, Burns jumps on a private jet to go to Austin originally to play before backing out. Meanwhile, Riley's got to get on a Delta flight to go to the Dominican for the Corals Punta Canta Championship. I mean, it's different lives out there on the PGA Tour, but that's why you love golf, right? There's some guys at the top, some guys still struggling.
And it's funny you mentioned that just about guys at the top. This was interesting. The win puts Sam Burns 10th in the world now and knocks DJ out of the top 10 for the first time in 7 years.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah, what a run for DJ.
Yeah, top 10 for 7 straight years. Wow.
Yeah, he's focused on other things maybe right now. But the other guy was Justin Thomas. He was the big name that was in that top 10 going into Sunday. And you're like, okay, this is the guy that's going to bubble up to the top and just take over the tournament, kind of like Tiger used to. He's clearly close. His game is close because he's near these leaderboards all the time. But something's missing that he's not closing out. Like, let's remember JT in 2019. He used to just pull away from these guys and get those wins as if he was anywhere near the top of the leaderboard. He just didn't have that on Sunday. He needs that Tiger Woods killer edge that he used to have. And he has the WGC this week, and then he's kind of got a week off before the Masters. He clearly wants that green jacket, but he needs to figure something else out over the next 3 weeks here to push him into a spot where he's going to contend in Augusta.
Yeah, 4 top 10s and 6 starts this year for Thomas. He's off to a good start, and you know, I think he is going to be the odds makers, one of the top picks, I think, you know, a couple weeks in Georgia. That makes a lot of sense. So, but I agree with you. He's a guy, you know, I like him. I was a bit hard on him during the Ryder Cup, but you know what? He's a good player. And, you know, I think he will be one of the names certainly to watch at Augusta in a couple weeks.
Off-season moves continue to be massive news in the NFL, and this week was no different, and that will be our T3. Deshaun Watson finished his tour of NFL teams interested in his services, and he has decided on the Cleveland Browns, who quickly inked him to the largest guaranteed contract at $230 million. Meanwhile, the AFC West bulked up even more. The Bills made a splash, and Mike's Packers sent Adams packing. Mike, did any of these moves shock you? Or at this point, are you past being surprised by the NFL?
This offseason is everybody I've talked to that's an NFL fan, I think we all agree. This offseason has been like unlike any other in recent memory.
Like NBA off seasons, you know, the yes. NBA, there's all yes. the rumors and guys yep. are teaming up and there's sidebar chats. It's the NFL has now morphed into that.
And just, I mean, we just look at the quarterback position for a moment here. Of all the quarterbacks that have changed addresses, Aaron Rodgers is the one who stays with his team. And he kind of started all this a year ago. But anyways, quickly a touch on the Watson thing, you know, Cleveland, it sounded like it was down to the Falcons and Saints, and then all of a sudden the Browns come out of left field. The Texans get a hell of a package in return, which is what they need to rebuild their team. They seem to like Davis Mills. Who knows what he's going to come into as a quarterback, but 3 first-rounders, a 3rd and 2/4, you know, and it looks like now Cleveland is obviously going to be moving on from Baker Mayfield. That was an interesting little exchange with his goodbye letter earlier in the week and then their trade request that followed. So interesting to see how things play out there. And I guess Baker's the next name on the QB carousel.
Yeah. At Cleveland, the Browns, they seemed like desperate, kind of, you know, good for them that they're in the mix. It's a little bit of both. You know, they clearly like, oh my God, we need a good quarterback. We need a good quarterback. We haven't had a good quarterback in 20 plus years. Let's go get this guy. And they obviously gave up a haul, as you mentioned, but good for them. Why shouldn't they be in the mix to go get a good quarterback? They're an NFL team. That's the difference in the NFL versus some of these other leagues where if some superstar comes up, you know he's going to one of three or four teams. Not in the NFL. Any of these teams can really go get him, and they needed a good quarterback. So why not get him, pay for it, show your fans you want to be in the mix because the team is good. Let's be honest. The team was a decent team, and they're going to be improved, and if he's playing for them, that's great. But let's remember, he might miss a few games to suspension that could derail their season this year a little bit. That's why you get the longer contract. But my guess is that Cleveland, maybe just the Cleveland owner, he knows how many games Deshaun Watson's getting, because otherwise he wouldn't have signed him or made the deal if he thought it was going to be a full year or 2 years worth of suspension. So he must know he's only going to miss a little bit of time, and then he'll be back ready to play this season and push for them for a playoff spot.
I mean, shifting gears, the Devontae Adams trade, that did shock me, I guess. I was not expecting him to get traded, but when it came through, it, and you start getting more information and putting things into context, obviously it makes the picture a little clearer, right? And I guess negotiations kind of fell off. He didn't want to be tagged. Packers traded him to protect the or tagged him to protect their asset, right? And they get a first and second round pick out of it from the Raiders. Adams gets a massive contract, which he deserves. He is the best receiver in football, and he deserves every penny he gets. Goes in now to the Raiders, which grew up in the Bay Area, loved the Raiders as a kid. He fulfills that. He's going to play with his college buddy, Derek Carr, who they played together at Fresno State. And he just bought a massive house in Vegas. So, I mean, the AFC has become the division in football with, I mean, all the moves that have transpired over the past couple weeks. I think all three teams could get wild card spots, but just unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
I know it's funny because, as you mentioned, Rodgers sticks and stays in Green Bay, re-signs. He probably thinks, you know what, we're on good terms now, me and the team and the GM, the president. I'm part of this management team. And then they trade one of his best offensive weapons. I would have paid a lot for a nice little pay-per-view behind-the-scenes look at Rodgers when he's checking his phone to say, what, we traded who? What? Why? They didn't consult me on that. Does this make the Packers better now? Maybe no, but it does set them up to maybe have some wiggle room to get some more help, see what comes up around the draft, if they need to make a move. I think it's probably in the best interest of the Packers long term, probably. But you're right. The Raiders, they get better. The Chiefs get better by adding Juju Smith. I mean, he's an offense. Their offensive weapons with the Chiefs now are just ridiculous. It's video game-esque type of stuff, and they know it's their year to win. It's their time. It's their window that they need to execute another Super Bowl and not just be a one-time winner. But, I mean, Raiders, Chargers, Broncos, they all add big pieces this year to make it the best division in football. And let's remember, these teams have to play each other twice a year. So that's a ton of games that are going to be excellent to watch. There's no walkovers in your division in the AFC West coming out of next season.
I want to see the AFC West get a lot of primetime games. I think those Sunday night, Monday nighters with these four teams going at it, that's going to be awesome.
Also, I believe my vote for best division uniforms. Love their colors. You got the red and white of the Chiefs, the Raiders black and gold, Chargers, those power
black and
blues.
Silver, black and silver. Sorry, black you're and thinking silver, Jimmy. You're thinking the other I'm Vegas, thinking Vegas team.
I'm thinking the Knights. Add the Chargers of the powder blue, and then the Broncos with that orange. A great uniform division.
Mixture of colors. Like Joseph's Technicolor dream coat, if you will. But I mean, look, the Chargers, young, promising franchise quarterback. And as we said last week, Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson get added to a team with Bosa and Derwin James. Justin Reed joins the Chiefs as well. Randy Gregory to Denver. Chandler Jones to the Raiders. I mean, KC may still be the cream of the crop there, but, you know, the grass has got a little more shorter over there in the West. And I think it's going to be, like I said, I wouldn't be shocked if all three teams, the division and then the three wild cards come from that division. It's that good. So,
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention the team that's, you know, a nice little, I don't know, maybe a three wood from where we are on a good day with a good win. Von Miller signing with the Bills. I think it's a good choice for him. He's going on a team that is set up to be a winner. He's just being another piece added, similar to what the Rams had done. He won't have the support in the front four like he did in L.A., but I think he can still be a factor. He played great for them throughout the playoffs, and I think if he brings that to the Bills, it's just another leadership piece on that defense. I mean, it's going to be a little bit colder in Buffalo than L.A., but maybe that suits him in that type of game that the Bills play.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he had a cup of coffee in L.A. He was in Denver for most of his career, so I don't think the snow bugs him. But, you know, Bills lost Jerry Hughes, one of their edge guys, a leader on that team, and Von Miller, I mean, will probably fill that void from the edge and just as a leader, as you mentioned, on the team. So I don't know if he sees all 6 years, but you know, a good addition for the Bills, who are another team, you know, probably division winners, but trying to put themselves in at the AFC championship level. So good business. First couple of weeks have been nothing short of impressive, and hopefully that will continue.
Move over NFL. The MLB is trying to make their hot stove action just as newsworthy, and it was close this past week, and that will be our T4. Once the CBA was agreed on, the doors opened for signings and trades throughout the league as players tried to find teams and teams tried to fill out rosters as spring training begins. But it was the big market teams that got the big fish, and the Blue Jays will try to repeat history with an Oakland A's third baseman. Mike, are you ready for ball season now?
Getting there. Had the spring training game on earlier here. I like to fast forward if we could just to the start of the season. I, you know, especially after that trade, Matt Chapman. And as you mentioned last time, trade for an A's third baseman worked out pretty well. You know, Chapman, 3-time Gold Glove winner, All-Star in 2019 in 5 seasons with the A's, coming off a bit of a down year, you know, but he had hip surgery in 2020. But I mean, good at the plate, a great defender, and a great addition to an already deadly lineup.
Yeah, I think Chapman is a great fit for this team. He's going to be steady defensively. He's going to help out with the ground ball pitchers that the Blue Jays have in the rotation. He's going to be a safe spot down the left side of that infield. He won't be as good a hitter as Donaldson was when he came over. He does strike out a lot, 202 strikeouts last season. But he's going to give you 25-plus home runs. He's going to have an on-base percentage over 300. He's going to hit a little bit further down your lineup, but that might be good because he's going to get some good pitches. The pitchers are going to want to pitch to him instead of the top part of this order. Their infield's fantastic. Chapman, Bichette, Espinal, Guerrero. That's not only one of the best in the AL East, it might be the best in the AL. You throw in that great rotation of Barrios, Ryu, Gausman, Manoah, and Kikuchi. I think they're a great team. I'm glad that they didn't trade Manoah for Freeman, because what they've put together is perfect. And speaking of Freeman, signing a 6-year, $162 million deal with the Dodgers, good for him. I'm really happy for him. He's clearly a good guy. I guess he's kind of a Canadian through association, but that team in LA is stacked now. They got another chance at going for a ring. They're really good throughout the entire lineup, a good pitching staff. They continue to add. Plus, Freeman going to the Dodgers keeps him out of the AL East, because I was worried he was either going to go to the Yankees or Red Sox. I just think that the Jays going for Chapman and making this move is better for them than getting Freeman and then trying to figure out what to do with Vladdy. It's not the right fit. Chapman secures your third base. Vladdy holds it down at first, and you got your anchors on the corner.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. And I mean, talk about moving quickly and thoughtless. After the Freeman thing kind of stalls out, moves quick to trade for Matt Olson from the A's, who are just having a fire sale. Yeah. But pick up Olson, all-star power hitter, good defensive player, born and raised in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. And he signs a massive long-term deal to be their first baseman. So didn't wait too long to replace Freddie. Obviously, tough to see him go after winning the World Series, but he got paid and he's on a damn good team in LA.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got the Red Sox. They're making moves as well. They added Trevor Story. He's a really good player. Lots of upside. And the Red Sox, though, they just don't scare me in the AL East as much as the Yankees or even the Rays. I mean, this guy gets 6 years at $140 million. So there's big money being tossed around. But they're still missing a lot of pieces. You know, they got Sale up front, but the rest of the rotation isn't as good as the Blue Jays. Where the Yankees, they made that move for Donaldson and didn't really do too much after that. I'm sure they have some disappointment that they didn't get a big fish like a Freeman or someone else out there. So I thought overall, the Jays did very well in this short window of an offseason for trading and signing. I was happy with what they did. Now, Trevor Story, obviously moving on, former Rocky. The Rockies did something a little bit weird. Obviously, letting Story go, they traded Arenado from last year, and then they signed Bryant to a six-year deal. Why? Why let one good third baseman go to bring in another? Seems a little bit weird. Carlos Carrero, he went on to the Twins on a three-year deal. There was lots of rumors about where he was going to end up, and he was kind of waiting to see what the market was going to look like. So I don't know if anyone had a better offseason, let's call it this short window offseason, than the Blue Jays. So as a Blue Jays fan, I'm happy with what they've done, and I seriously consider them near the top of favorites for the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, think back prior to the lockout, you know, getting Barreo signed and Kevin Gausman, you know, kind of working on both ends of the offseason here. So really, really excited to see this team get playing here in April.
Yeah, and this is your reminder that when we did who's going to be champions in 2022 in our last show before Christmas, I selected the Blue Jays to win the World Series in 2022.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think you picked like the Baltimore Orioles, but we can go back and look at that.
I was a lot of eggnog at the time.
Now, this week was a big transaction show, and it will continue in our T5. Monday was the NHL trade deadline, but with the cap locking up teams' funds and moves being made leading up to the deadline, the day was a bit of a dud. Fleury did find a new home in Minnesota, and Giordano is coming home to play for the Maple Leafs. Mike, did any team jump out at you as the winner of this year's deadline?
I think the Florida Panthers, you know, getting Claude Giroux, 15 years in Philly, 1,000 games. I think it was only him and Bobby Clarke to do 1,000 games as Flyers. He's been their captain for the past 9 years, off to a decent season this year, 43 points thus far. I think he was the All-Star Game MVP. I know that's near and dear to your heart, but they add him and Ben Chiarot, from defenseman from Montreal, to an already stacked team. I mean, the Panthers probably are going to be the one seed heading into the playoffs. Huberto, Hart Trophy candidate. They got a bunch of guys with 20 goals or more, good defense, and now they've added Claude Giroux and Ben Chiarot to an already solid, solid team. So I like, you know, the Leafs, what they did with Giordano, and Fleury goes to Minnesota, but Florida picked up two prime pieces.
Yeah, I agree with you. Florida's the big winner, and they were already one of the best teams going into it. They know they got to be all in. Claude Giroux, he can play in your top six. He can be a key component on your power play. He'll help out with big face-offs in their own zone. They added Hag and Chiarot, as you mentioned, on the back end. That makes their defense depth even better. Ekblad could miss the first round of the playoffs, so you need that depth on the back end because, you know, more injuries might pop up. So I think Florida did the right thing that they needed to do. They needed to add experience and depth. They got both, so watch out for them. I really like that move. Minnesota, they made the biggest splash, though. So although Florida won, I think Minnesota going out, they knew their issue was goaltending. They got a high-flying offense, and they could not keep up with the amount of goals that they were giving from their bad goaltending, let's call it. But now they got Fleury. He's proven in the playoffs. He's got a great record in the playoffs, winning cups. And then you got Cam Talbot, who can mix in a game or two if need be. So it's a nice little duo that they have. They only gave up a second rounder, which was a bit of a shock. I figured with multiple teams looking for goalies for this playoff stretch that they would be able to get, Chicago would be able to get more for Fleury. But a second rounder for him, take him. Minnesota, great move.
Yeah, and I guess they had the cap space to take him on because he's, was he just over $7 million. But he will be a free agent in the offseason, so you know, he gets a chance to have a playoff run here. They're probably going to battle it out with St. Louis and Nashville to figure who the other two teams behind Colorado are going to be in that division. But a good team got better.
Yeah, and I guess goalies, talking about Minnesota, addressing their situation. We need to address the Maple Leaf situation and what they did or didn't do. Now, I'm going to shock you when I'm going to say that what they did with their goalies over the trade deadline here, I actually like. There was no goalies out there worth trading a piece or a future pick. And without trading for Fleury, who really was the only one out there that I thought I would have liked in a Maple Leafs uniform, they put Mrazek on waivers. It's a clear message to Campbell that the net is yours if you want it and if you can handle it come the playoffs. We'll weather the storm here with whatever goalies we need to until he's back from injury. But once it gets into it, the net's yours, Campbell's, and you need to take it. Now, adding Gio on the back end makes your top four strong. You kind of got two options. You can have Brody and Riley play together, let them keep continuing what they've had a strong year, get Gio and Muzz playing together on the back end, or you can go to 2019 when Giordano won the Norris Trophy playing alongside TJ Brody. Either of those mixes is great on your back end, but you got four top players playing defense for you that strong. The bottom two, who cares? You got some kind of combo. Sandin, when healthy, sounds like he's going to be out a little bit. You got the Russian Bear, Lubushkin. You got Hall, or you got Liljegren if needed. So you got some depth on the back end to fill those last two spots. It works for me. Your top six is rocking. Don't touch any of them. The offense is going to be there. Bottom six, there's more than like eight or nine guys vying for those bottom two lines. They got something to prove the next month and a half here to see who's going to have one of those six spots come game one of the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with you on the point on Campbell. You know, I like him. I think he's a good goalie. He's just hit a bit of a rough patch, and the rib injury obviously doesn't help matters. But it's a good message to him too, right? That they believe in him and they feel he's their guy. And I mean, last year he played well in the playoffs. And he's a good goalie, so he's going to get his opportunity again, which he deserves. And, you know, picking up Giordano, you know, not to really add much more than you've already said, but a good veteran addition, you know, Toronto guy. It's a good fit. He's a good player, has been for a long time, and, you know, good to add that on your stretch run.
Yeah, life is hilarious. I played against Giordano, high-level hockey. We were 18, 17, whatever it is, right before we went to the OHL. And he is 39, in amazing shape, going to try to win a Stanley Cup. And I smashed 38 beers this weekend. So we're not quite on the same level, but we once were a little while back. But elsewhere around the league, the Bruins got Lindholm. It's going to help their defense. I'm not too worried about the Bruins, because they don't really have much goaltending as well. It sounds like that's a theme around the league. The Oilers did nothing. I mean, Connor McDavid must be shaking his head. Like, you know, remember when Joey Batts called out the Blue Jays front office for not doing anything at the trade deadline? Connor must be storming up to Holland's office and say, you didn't do anything today, really, that's going to help us try to win. They still got the bad goaltending. The Rangers added some depth, adding Kopp from the Jets. Vancouver, Winnipeg, Columbus, they're just selling parts now. So, hey, it's time to start focusing on the playoff push. You need everyone to stay healthy as you get into that time. But it's going to be a lot of games here the last part of March and all of April before the playoffs start. But I'm excited for it now.
Yeah. Giordano actually mentioned he played against you in his opening remarks.
I think he said I was a hell of a skater, just couldn't handle the puck. Something like that, right? Now it's time to move into our golf picks. Going into the Valspar, I was up 18-8. I had Burns, who won for 10 points. I had Fitzpatrick, who was T5 for 5 points. And then Mackenzie Hughes missed the cut. Mike had Adam Hadwin, who was off to a good start there, but he finished T7, just a 2 measly points. Morikawa was T68. What's going on there? And Jason Day missed the cut. Ugh. So now the score is 33-10 for me. And this week, we're going to the WGC match play in Austin, a cool bracket-like tournament to follow the March Madness basketball. So here's what we're going to do, because we don't really have top fives, top tens, and top 20s. We're going to do 10 points for the win, 5 points if you make it to the semifinals and lose, and 2 points for a quarterfinal loss. Okay, you cool with that, Mike?
We're doing 1 point if they win their group.
I'll give you 1 point if you win your group and make it in. How about
that? I think we should preface that for the fans out there that may not be familiar with this tournament.
Yep.
16 foursomes, okay? They play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You basically win your group, you get put into the round of 16, and then Saturday, Sunday is the match play.
I mean, we'll get into this next week when we talk about this tournament, but I like this tournament. Once a year, yep. It's cool. Do it right around March Madness. It's smart marketing. Let the guys play some match play. It's a little less stressful than, you know, worrying about your score and every single putt. So it'll be good. Now, Mike, I actually get first pick this week, even though I'm smoking you, and I know exactly where I'm going to start. I'm going to start with a guy who was great at the Ryder Cup. He knows how to play these match plays. I'm going to go with Cantlay.
I'm going to go with John Rahm.
Cool. Easy. Nice. He got a nice little draw on his group as well. So I like that one. It's probably smart. I'm going to go with Victor Hovland. He's got some interesting guys in his group. I think he can come out of that. And then who knows once he gets into the head-to-head match play in the playoffs.
I was going to go one direction, but he's in a tough group. So I'm going to take with my second pick the hot hand, Justin Thomas.
Nice. I think he'll play well here. He's got to prove something. He wants to be one of those top guys. I like it. This guy seems to always play well in these match plays. He gets up for it. I think he thinks he's some sort of athlete as well. And it's close to his hometown. So I'll go Jordan Spieth.
Last pick, I'm going to pick Paul Casey. He's in a tough group. You know, he's playing with Louis Oosthuizen and our boy from Canada, Mr. Corey Connors, but you know, Casey's done well here, and I like him. The other guy I was looking at, but he's got a tough group. Scottie Scheffler. He was runner up last year. Yep. Local Texas guy. He's got to play with Fitzpatrick, Fleetwood, and Ian Poulter. So a tough group.
That is a tough group. Tough group. But hey, love it. Follow along. Make sure you know what's going on in that bracket as well as your March Madness bracket. And coming up after the break, we're going to play the classic Would You Rather. So don't miss out. Mike, you're an adventurous guy, and I'm sure you're planning one of your wild adventure trips this summer. So I thought I'd start off by asking, would you rather bungee jump or would you rather skydive?
I'll stay on the ground and have a beer.
That not an option. I want an answer.
I'm busy that weekend. Can't go.
You know what I would actually pick? Skydiving.
Why?
Because you get someone strapped to your back that's an expert and knows what they're doing.
Yeah, true. I would do that too.
I think I'd feel more comfortable and I could enjoy the ride. The bungee jump, all I would be thinking is this thing's going to snap. And then if it snaps, I just hit the rocks.
I would just rather go to one of those indoor things where the air just kind of blows you up and you're like, oh, I'm skydiving. Look at me. That's more my cup of tea than getting in a plane and doing it.
Maybe for my next birthday party, I'll invite you. We'll go there for the indoor skydiving.
Busy that day too.
All right, let's get into some sports then. We got some good would you rathers, and we're going to start it off with a real good one that I was thinking about. Now, I was watching a lot of college basketball this weekend. There's a lot of timeouts. I think there's like 145 timeouts. It's ridiculous. Commercial TVs, timeouts here. I'm making notes on my phone about would you rathers. I'm drinking beer, so let's get right into the first one. And we might have done this one before, but it's maybe time to refresh it. Because I noticed that Matthew Fitzpatrick was the only golfer this week and even this year that keeps the pin in while putting. So, Mike, would you rather keep the pin in or would you rather take the pin out?
I think this is the first time we've done it. I don't remember doing this one. And you know what? I think we all kind of got used to it or had to during COVID golf because you don't touch the flag sticks. I prefer to take the pin out. I don't care if someone leaves it in. I'm fine either way. If I had to make a preference, I prefer the pin out.
As a weekend hacker, I'm keep it in. I got places to go. I got a beer on the patio waiting for me. But as a pro, there is no reason not to take it out. You have a caddy, and I'm always worried that the putt is going to go too hard, ricochet off that pin and stay out. It's going to end up costing me a ton. Or the caddy in the group of four just didn't put it in right. You know what I mean? Sometimes it wiggles there, and then it costs me like $10,000 because the ball ricochets off that pin. No thanks. Take it out every single time for me then.
You have to tend the flag too. You can't have it flopping around while you're trying to concentrate.
That's right.
Key.
Number two, sticking with golf. If you were a pro golfer and could only play one, would you rather play the Florida swing or the California swing?
For me, it's the Florida swing. I love the Players Championship, love the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and I like the Honda and Valspar. But those two tournaments, the Players is, you know, like we say, the unofficial fifth major, and Arnold Palmer, the king of golf, to play in his tournament. What an honor. Florida swing for me.
Torrey Pines, Pebble Beach, TPC Scottsdale, and Riviera. Clearly the answer is the California swing. Plus, it's January, February. There's not as many of the big guys out there. I might be able to rack up some cash and some FedEx points. As a viewer, I prefer it too because I love primetime golf. We need more of it throughout the year. So I'll take the California swing.
You know, Scottsdale's in Arizona.
It's part of the West Coast swing.
Well, the notes said California or Florida.
It's included in the California swing, Michael.
It's not changing my pick, though. Just being conversational.
Okay, let's move to football then. Carson Wentz is a Commander. Weird to say that. And Baker Mayfield just got dumped. Would you rather be Carson or would you rather be Baker right now?
I'd say Baker Mayfield. You know, maybe by the time this podcast is finished editing and by our good friend, Mr. Greg Fillion, and gets out there, he will be already on a team. But the fact is he will be traded. He has 1 year left on his deal, and that team can then decide, do we like him? Or maybe Baker plays so well, he says, you know what, I'm going to test free agency next year. So it's an opportunity for him to kind of, you know, rebound after a tough couple years in Cleveland. So I like what he has in front of him with a chance to further his career. So I'm going with Baker.
I'm going to say Carson. They're giving him a chance. The team isn't that bad in Washington. Clearly, he's a likable guy. He's trying to be good at football. Teams are giving him a chance. My fear for Baker is that he's playing musical chairs. The music stopped and all the seats are taken. You know what I mean? Where will he go? Where is he going to play? Even the Colts just traded for Matt Ryan. So I don't see Baker being a starter on a decent team. So I'm not sure where he ends up playing.
Good analogy.
With the two clear-cut number one divisions in their respective sports, I ask you, would you rather be in the AFC West or would you rather be in the AL East?
AL East. They got the Baltimore Orioles. Nothing more I need to say. Games. Exactly.
Your team can win some games. Yep.
Exactly.
All right. Well, hear me out on this one, okay? Because I put quarterbacks and pitchers kind of on the same level. They both can change the game drastically for their team, but they can't win the game on their own, like let's say a hockey goalie or an NBA superstar. So because of that, I think I have a better chance of winning in the AL East. You got Mahomes, Carr, Wilson, and Hubert are top QBs that are tough to beat in the AFC West. The Yankees have Cole, the Jays have Barrios, the Red Sox have Sale, the Rays have Kluber, the Orioles have a pizza delivery guy as their ace. So I'm not as scared to play against them. Give me the AL East, which isn't what it used to be in the baseball world.
Camden Yards.
Would you rather your team play in a one-game bracket-style tournament or would you rather they play a best of seven playoff?
I like the bracket style. You know, it's similar to NFL playoffs, I guess, a one and done type of thing, right? I think over the course of seven games, there's the argument that the better team should prevail in a series, but I think both of them offer excitement. For me, I like the bracket. It provides you with the St. Peters of the worlds advancing, and that's what we like to see as fans, you know, the upsets, the underdogs. So the bracket style is my preference.
Yeah, to watch a playoff that is bracket style is thrilling. It's awesome to follow along because it's easy and quick. But for my teams, I want the best of seven. I want the chance to bounce back after a bad loss, change up the lineup, build the suspense till a deciding game seven. I mean, it's a war zone even for diehard fans. But I would be so pissed if you battled all year long to lose to a 15 seed on a last second shot. No thanks. Give me the slow death of seven games. Clearly, you can tell I'm a Leafs fan. Now, going into the Sweet 16, would you rather be number 15 St. Peter's or number 11 seed Iowa State?
I'm going to say number 11 Iowa State. And because you get past Miami, who they're going to play here in the Sweet 16, you're playing Kansas or Providence. Okay. St. Peter's has to play Purdue. And then if they get past them, waiting on the other side is UCLA or UNC. Much tougher road. So I'm going with the Iowa State. Was it Cyclones, I believe?
I'll take the Iowa State Cyclones as well. They play Miami, who is number 10 out of the not so good ACC. Both teams are playing well, but advantage to Iowa State in my mind after beating a Wisconsin team that had high expectations. St. Peter's is good, and they're feeling it right now. But they probably wish they played again right away on Monday night instead of waiting a week. Maybe this 5 days of being a celebrity will go to their head, and Purdue will smash them. So I'll take the Cyclones.
Just had to mention Wisconsin.
I yes, had to get it in somewhere in the show. Okay, last one. Mike, you're handcuffed to a couch for 4 days. Would you rather watch the first weekend of March Madness, or would you rather watch the Masters?
Win-win. But it's nothing really compares to the Masters. It's the best. The music, the dulcet tones of Mr. Jim Nance. Figuring out how to make a pimento cheese myself, even though it tastes terrible, and predicting what my champion's meal would be. But just the beauty of it, the scenery, the tournament itself, the tradition. It is a tradition unlike any other. For me, the Masters.
This one's so tough. It's a true Sophie's choice. But it kills me to say this. I'm going to take March Madness. Because it's from noon to midnight, 48 games in the weekend. You got upsets happening. Your emotions ride up and down. Plus, you're making bets and parlays and in-game bets. Plus, you're following your bracket. I mean, I love the Masters, just like you said, of all the things you talked about. But the golf kind of winds down around 6 p.m. And then what do? I just watch Brandel Chamblee talk about, you know, John Rahm's swing for 12 hours till the next tee off at 7 a.m. And what if someone I don't like is leading the tournament? Like in 2018 when Patrick Reed won and it ruined my entire weekend. Give me the Madness. I'll take March Madness. Now, sign up today with MyBookie and use promo code JABBO to make your first deposit. Follow our picks with a chance to win only at MyBookie.com. And we got your locks coming up right here as each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. March Madness was evil to us this weekend as we both lost our locks. Good news that there's 24 more games this week. So let's find a winner. I still got the tee and I'll go first, Mike. I'm going to go to the East region. I'll take number 4, UCLA. They're playing number 8, UNC, on Friday night. UNC coming off its biggest upset over Baylor, but UCLA has the veterans that took them on a run last year. I like them to do it again. UCLA -2 Friday.
All right, it's time to get serious here. My picks the last couple weeks have not been too good, so we're going to rebound here. We're going big. Thursday night, the number 3 Texas Tech Red Raiders against the number 2 Duke Blue Devils. Texas Tech is favored by 1.5 points. I'm taking Texas Tech to advance to the Elite 8 and put Duke out of the tournament and Coach K's final game. I got Texas Tech in the final in my bracket. It's only right that I ride them in this. So I'm taking Texas Tech -1.5.
Wow, your lock is to end the career of Coach K. That is gutsy. I hope it works out for you, but karma, man. If you're going to end the poor man's career,
I don't think he's a poor man. I am.
He's doing just fine. Just fine. I'm poor. Now, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts,
can't lose.